What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the Feminist Bar Podcast. The Feminist Bar Podcast. What is good? What is popping? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina Tsuyamaka. Oh my God, am I back again to talk about abortion and reproductive justice? Absolutely. Am I back with a guest? No. Does that mean I lied in the last episode? No. It's purely circumstantial. I know that I have promised that I will be creating an episode with an abortion expert, though I consider myself one, but maybe someone from the United States region-ish, maybe, because, you know, I prefer my feminist African, but anyway. yeah, definitely gonna make that episode at some point and give you a nice little analysis once everything has kind of unraveled a bit. But I'm here today particularly because yesterday there was actually a confirmation from the Supreme Court that the draft opinion was legitimate, so they will be overturning Roe v. Wade. And I guess social media has kind of been going back and forth. The conservatives are doing the most, and I'm not just talking about the ones from America. I think we currently have like different African feminists pulling out their teeth, fighting for their lives on Twitter right now, just trying to go hard for safe abortion, which I love, which I absolutely respect. And, you know, something that I was thinking about is the fact that we always tell people, oh, like, you don't need to believe in abortion. It's not Santa. Oh, like, that's such a silly statement. But the fact that, like, the United States Republican Party has used the anti-abortion angle as one of the biggest reasons to vote for them and their biggest appeal to kind of like conservative white Christians is why we are here today. And I've seen so many black feminist talking about how white women voted for Trump and this is how we got here. Anyway, I'm not necessarily gonna get into that, but actually another thing, being that the United States is currently seeing reduced birth rates at a time that like white capitalism is really, really thriving, at a time that wealth hoarders are really, really thriving. And, you know, a few people are asking, is this about morality? Is this really about abortion? Or is this about wanting to feed the population so capitalism can continue to have people to subject to borderline slave labor? And that's interesting, because one of the things that they spoke about in this draft opinion was that restricting abortion does not mean that they want to force motherhood onto women, but instead they want to set up all these comprehensive processes so that women can give birth and these children can be put into the foster system. First of all, spoken like a white man who has never spent a day in his life without a place to sleep or a support system, because the foster system and the adoption system are not fairies and roses. A majority of the children in the foster system are children of marginalized groups that have been ripped away from their families in really arbitrary ways. So adoption is also not this amazing, flowery thing that I guess we've been taught to believe it is. But most importantly, the same people that say that abortion is traumatic on a woman's body are completely ignoring that. They're saying that they want women to carry children for nine months, give birth, and then give them away, because women are incubators to continue populating the world like another version of Handmaid's Tale. That's kind of crazy to me, but that is not why I'm here. So I wanted to do a really, really short episode just to talk about why reproductive justice, safe abortion, but really reproductive justice and all its facets and why it is central to the feminist movement and why it is central to the freedom of all people, right? And I actually saw a tweet that said it's interesting that people think that they are coming for queer rights next because of this judgment, but you don't realize they are coming for queer people in this judgment already, right? Because consider how many trans men are impacted by something like this. You know what? Let me get into it. So I just want to talk a little bit about why, right? So I've already spoken specifically about them wanting to feed into this adoption thing, adoption processes and the foster system and, oh, like, save the children, blah, blah, blah. And I just think this is a fantastic time to talk about the way that children are treated, right? Because if you are putting people everywhere in a position to bring people into the world that they cannot care for, that they cannot provide for, essentially, you don't really care about the well-being of these children. And at a time that we already exist in a society that treats children like property, people have children and they think, oh, this is mine. People see children as an extension of themselves and not as individuals who will one day have to be responsible, not only for themselves, but have to be responsible in society, have to respect social people are raising serial killers for real, period. So I think now is a really good time to interrogate some of that treatment of children, and because I think it's really fucked up that the people in the world who need us the most and the people in the world that are most likely to forgive us are the people that are ignored the most. I just find that so cruel, and I think it's also something that happens as a result of thinking that, like, oh, a child is punishment. Oh, you had sex, so you're going to have to deal with the consequences. And that is that patriarchal consequence that I'm always talking about. I think I've been talking about this probably since, like, last year, to say that we want women to have the freedom to live without patriarchal consequence, right? Men have sex. Men are sexually liberated. Men are encouraged to be themselves at all times, to follow their desires, to pursue their desires, to feel pleasure. And we are trying to create a conducive environment for women to do the same. But if you ban abortion, you are telling women that, yeah, you can enjoy yourself, but if you do, that's a consequence, that's the punishment, and you're gonna have to take it. And at the other side of that lesson is children that are suffering, that are being abused, that are being trafficked, that are growing up in just complete lack, that are growing up to be subjected to slave labor. So who has gained from that? Who has gained from that? And something that is also interesting is how a lot of constitutions don't actually talk specifically about things, but they are more like an umbrella, right? That is supposed to then shelter any other like legislation that comes below that. And specifically with this, abortion not being mentioned in the United States Constitution or any other constitution for that matter, but having to fall under other certain rights is seemingly starting to be a problem, because you're finding that lawmakers and law defenders and law enforcers who are anti-abortion are using this as an opportunity to say, well, constitutions don't talk about abortion. Abortion is not something that is constitutionally protected, but if these constitutions mean so much to us, if these principles and these Bill of Rights that we claim to live by mean so much to us, then does something not being enshrined in the right to privacy, the right to freedom, the right to dignity, is that not enough? And if it is not enough, then let's put abortion in the motherfucking Constitution. Let it stand alone and protect it for what it is, because now when you say that, oh, something is not really enshrined in the right to privacy, that gives you room to come for anything else that's not about privacy. So this is important, right? Privacy and freedom to be, freedom to live, freedom to associate without state-sanctioned violence is important for all women. It's important for all women, not just women who want to access safe abortion. The privilege that you have to move from one place to the other without someone questioning you about where you were and what you were doing simply because you are pregnant or simply because you have the potential to be pregnant is completely, completely unreasonable. Right? And earlier I was addressing the fact that trans men have also been heavily impacted by anti-abortion laws, right? So the importance of this is also to help queer people enforce and keep the right to opt out of biological processes that otherwise they could not opt out of. So if you're saying that people cannot get abortions, then you are also forcing pregnancy onto trans men. And that is a kind of violence that it's crazy. I have to make a podcast episode about it. Like, why are we making podcast episodes? Why are we making podcast episodes? Why are we making hashtags? Why are we protesting about things deeply connected to just the very core of who people are? I just think it's sick, right? I just think it's really sick. And using biology as a tool to control those who do not want to fit in the box, those who do not want to raise children within the nuclear family and live happily ever after, because let's not lie, that is exactly what white capitalism imagines when they are saying that, oh, like, we want people to have children out there. It is a means to control, it is a means to domesticate, it is a means to calm, right? Your feminism is too raging. You need to be pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen. That's what this is about. And once women are able to say, no, I don't want children, I'm not going to have children, they have options. I'm going to work instead. I'm going to be this instead. I'm going to be that instead. I'm going to be a mother later on in my life. The state wants to even control that. So I think what I've just been trying to get to is that reproductive justice, the right to bodily autonomy, the right to say, this is what I want to do with my body, this is what I don't want to do with my body, it is really central to allowing people to be exactly who they are and to giving people back their lives and their bodies. And it's been really unfortunate, really sad to watch the world go the other way. And this specifically was not about how this is going to impact Africa, because we already know, I've already spoken about that. But maybe I can briefly address how it's going to affect poor women specifically, because I remember in the last episode, I did say that rich people live above the law and above the system. And, you know, even if something is illegal, if you have money, you can access it, right? But something that has been happening in the United States over the past couple of years is these anti-abortion clinics. So there are heavy funders of clinics that purport to providing safe abortion in pure communities. Can I just also state that these clinics are located very, very close to safe abortion clinics, and they are anti-abortion clinics, right? So you have a lot of women from poor neighborhoods, poor regions, going to these clinics and actually then trying to be talked out of abortion, right? They're going there, they're facing harassment, they're facing judgment, they're being told, hey, how about you decide not to abort and we'll give you some kind of health insurance where, you know, maybe if you get a flu, we can help you. And that doesn't give people much of a choice. And you are just kind of now in this position where you have created some sort of invisible contract with people that are not on your side, right? And you have been put in a position where you cannot exercise your rights without the threat of something going incredibly wrong, which is a fantastic pipeline into how law enforcers and specifically prosecutors, the formal justice system, have easier access to women with no money. So even the fact that women have been getting arrested for miscarrying, women have been getting arrested for accessing abortion, is something that is mostly prevalent in communities where people simply don't have the resources to fight. And that is really upsetting, that the only people that actually need the state are the people whom the state sanctions violence against. So again, this whole thing, a real threat to intersectional justice. And I hope that I'm not sitting here 6 months from now making an episode about how things have unraveled since Roe v. Wade, right? But anyway, that is it from me. I just came here to get some things off my chest, essentially. I think because also when I put out the initial episode, I was feeling pretty riled up and I really initially wanted to write things down and blah, 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 but I just didn't get to do that. I just kind of turned on the mic and spoke, and I thought this was a good chance for me to say something else. Outside of that, thank you to everybody who's tuning in. I know some people have only found this podcast because of my speaking about Roe v. Wade, but we're here for other things too, right? We're here for other things too. And on that note, I also want to take this time to say that it has been an amazing 28 weeks, I think, probably, of season 3. I have kind of been on a roll, putting out episodes every week, having these conversations every week, but I am exhausted. Okay, plain and simple, period. I'm tired. And all good things must come to an end. So, this is probably going to be the second last episode of season 3 of the Feminist Bar podcast. Please subscribe to Patreon if you want to continue getting content, because obviously those that are paying for it, they gotta get this content, child. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. This has been your host, Tina Zuemaka, all by herself without a guest. And that's it from me. I'll see you this week.